Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to hear part two of learning disorders. We here at Family Talk have the great privilege and honor of having Dr. Meg Meeker not only as our expert physician in residence, but Dr. Meeker is also a co-host for our daily radio broadcast, which you're listening to today. It's great to have you back, Meg.
Great to be here, Ryan.
Yesterday, we started talking about learning disorders,
right,
or learning disabilities. And why don't we start today? Give the definition of what a learning disorder is.
A learning disorder is a neurologic phenomenon that takes place in the brain where a person has difficulty either receiving or processing or responding to a certain stimulus. Mm-hmm. And it can manifest itself in many different ways. You can have dyslexia. We talked about that. We talked about dysgraphia, where you have difficulty writing, dyspraxia, where you have difficulty with motor functioning. And then, of course, we've got other things that are auditory processing issues where someone has difficulty distinguishing sounds. And so they can't respond to something that they hear because they hear differently than other people. Mm-hmm. You can also have people who have visual processing issues where they'll look at something and they can't distinguish between shape or color.
Okay.
And they have difficulty processing that. So a learning disorder can be anything that interrupts the normal process whereby the brain takes in information. Maybe they can't take it in. It could be a disruption in how they process that information, or it could be a disruption in how that that information is given back out. How a person wants to respond to the information they just processed. So it can be an interruption anywhere along those lines.
And I like what you said yesterday. This has nothing to do with intelligence.
Exactly.
I think sometimes kids or parents are like, oh, no, I don't want my kid to be dumb.
Right.
And dyslexia does not mean that.
Not
ADHD
at all.
Does not mean that. Dysgraphia doesn't mean that. It means they're processing information differently than the rest of us.
Exactly. And one of the things that I tell children, and I say it very deliberately and clearly in front of their parents, because I think parents can struggle with it as well, is that a learning issue, and I usually call them learning issues, isn't about your intelligence at all. As a matter of fact, many kids with a number of different learning issues can be higher intelligence. I tell kids it's a wiring issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them that sometimes, for instance, if a child has ADHD or an adult has ADHD, they've got too many wires firing all at once. And my goal as a physician is to use whatever I can to help all of those different wires fire at the same time in the same direction. And so I kind of give them a visual, and that's really what a learning disorder is all about, is making sure that all the wiring is hooked up in the right way.
Sure. Sure. We talked a little bit about ADHD yesterday. Why don't we start talking about ADHD in regards to medication? Because that is a pretty hot topic. Whether you should medicate, whether you shouldn't medicate, whether you can control it with diet or sleep and things like that. I'm ADHD, but I wasn't diagnosed until I was an adult. When my dad was getting his PhD, they told him that when you hit puberty, kids grow out of it.
That's right.
And at 23, he went, oh my goodness, of course you don't grow out of this.
Yes.
I know that. And
yes.
I started medication and it helped me in college and helped me get through. But I was at that time, I was 23. And so the medication I was taking, it really did affect my appetite.
Sure.
Ritalin totally took away my appetite. I was skinny anyway.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a big deal. Where do you fall on the medication range?
Well, you know, we've come a long way. When you talk about starting on medication, I think, without divulging your age, but everybody probably knows how old you are anyway.
I'm 43. I don't care.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So 20 years ago, you know, we were using different medications than we're using right now. They're fundamentally the same type of medication. But
can I bring up something I think is a myth?
Sure.
Because when I was younger, there were some kids with ADD that we knew, and people were talking about, oh, I don't want my kids to be on medication because I don't want them to be not dumbed down, but slowed down. Mm-hmm. Somehow they thought the medication was a depressant or a downer. And with ADD, it's really not that. A lot of the medication is a stimulant.
Yes,
which,
most of it is, yeah. Which
so
you think,
normal person,
why,
you think, exactly,
why would you give a hyperactive person or a person with attention deficit whose mind is going in a million different directions too fast, why would you give them a stimulant? Well, again, I think it's a wiring issue. It has a paradoxical effect whereby it allows everything to work in synchrony.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't dumb you down. It doesn't. Some people, no matter what medication you give them, it can put them to sleep. But usually this does not do that.
Yeah.
What it really does is it allows the electricity in your brain to fire the way it's supposed to fire.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, as a physician who wants to care for the entire person, the whole body, that the best approach to ADHD, first and foremost, is get your diagnosis right. I think that many kids, like we said in the earlier program, are diagnosed with ADHD where they really don't have it. What they have is poor discipline. They're not parented well. They have a behavior issue. They have oppositional defiance disorder where they're just angry all the time and they're running around kind of out of control. So it's really important to get your diagnosis correct. And once you have the diagnosis, then you need to figure out, do you have more of the attention component, more of the hyperactivity component, or equal of both? In my experience, girls have more the attention component and boys have more the hyperactivity component, or both the ADHD. And that affects the way I'm going to choose medication. It affects the way we're going to do different things. It also depends on the age of the person.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a student who's going off to college and they're in college, I'm more concerned with that student maybe selling their drugs because there's a very good street value. If you have a fourth grader, that's less of a problem. So that's going to affect the way I do it. But fundamentally—
What about like first graders? You think first graders ought to be medicated?
It depends.
Yeah. Does it really?
It really depends.
Some kids can really benefit from that.
Exactly.
And some kids, it's mild and maybe you should wait a little while.
Exactly. It depends. Is it primarily an attention difficulty or is it a hyperactive difficulty?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really have—
Can you say— One size doesn't fit all.
No.
It's not the same for every kid. You could have two kids that are ADD, or you could have two kids that are ADHD. You could have two kids with dyslexia, whatever it is. It's not the same.
Not the same.
In every kid. You got to treat them differently.
Every child is different. Every child responds differently to medication. But I fundamentally believe, though, Ryan, that you never just give a child a medication and then off they go.
Mm.
I think that if you are going to use medication, it has to be done with some changes in parenting. And it has to be done by using some educational materials. And there's some good educational materials online where people can go and it can increase their ability to pay attention. I also think that it's important for parents to educate themselves about what they can do to help their child with ADHD. For instance, ADHD in a boy who's in the fifth grade and video games is a terrible match.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. I know.
You're making some kids mad right there.
I'm making some parents and some kids mad. But here's why I say that. Our culture feeds into ADHD as it stands today. It doesn't help with ADHD. Because you think about it, if you're a fifth grade boy and you love playing games, and we know that boys are very visual people anyway, they're looking at a screen, the characters on the screen are making loud noises, they're moving very fast, and he's called to respond very fast to all that movement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a parent will say, well, my son can sit there for an hour and play a video game. He doesn't have ADHD. They say, well, no, he's exercising his ADHD because he's making his mind jump to all these different places. So I'm not saying that all boys with ADHD shouldn't play video games. My point is, you need to counter that. Because that's not helping his ADHD. It's actually hurting it. Because what that boy needs to learn to do is to read black words on a white page that don't sing at him or jump or change color or contort themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's boring.
Yep.
So we need to keep that balance going.
Definitely. And balance is good in all areas of
all
life.
All areas, yes.
Yeah. Well, and as an adult, I took Ritalin for a long time. And when I turned... Oh, goodness. Maybe 38. My body just couldn't process it the same way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected me totally differently. I think you need to keep that in mind when kids are on medication.
Yes.
You got to ask them, you know, how are you feeling? And what are the side effects? And what are the common side effects?
Yes.
You know, for me, it literally took my appetite totally away. But Ritalin's a very fast-acting medication, so it's out of your body quickly as well.
Yes.
So if I ate breakfast and then took it. By the time lunch came around, it was out of my body.
Yep.
So I needed to eat lunch, and I knew it. I was very, very hungry.
Yeah.
But now at 43, I can't take Ritalin anymore. It just doesn't work with me. And at this point in my life, I know how to act. I know what affects me most.
Right.
I've learned that. But man, as a child, it's tough navigate those waters.
One of the things that I try very hard to do with children, regardless of their age, if they're first or second grade or if they're in high school, is I ask them to start really paying attention to their bodies and how they feel. And what does it feel like when you're not on medication? Is your brain going fast? Is your body doing different things? Do you feel happier or do you feel sadder?
Mm-hmm.
So I get them to tune into that so that they can tell me then when they take medication how different it feels.
Yeah.
And whether that's good or whether that's bad. And I try to use very simple language, but that often is how I can tell whether a child's doing well or not. Because a parent may say, oh, they're a different kid. I like it. They just sit and they do their homework. But then I ask the child and they go, you know, I can sit and do my homework, but I'm not funny anymore. And I like being funny.
Yeah.
And then I know he's on too high of a dose, so I need to back down.
And maybe one medication doesn't work.
Exactly.
And you've got to try another one.
Try another thing.
And with something like ADHD, you might need to try it for a while.
Yes.
It might need to be a week or two to see how
exactly.
is that going. You know, it's, when you first start Ritalin, I mean, it hits you like a sledgehammer.
Yes.
It's,
and your
at
body,
least it did with me.
Yes. And your body acclimates to it, mm-hmm. and it metabolizes it differently. And where one medication for 2 years worked for 6 hours, now it only works for three.
Yeah.
And you think, what's happening? So it's
talk to the parent, too, about not prescribing things for your kids. Let a doctor do that. You know, if it's not working right away, don't give them more.
No.
Talk to the doctor about that. Yeah. These are actual medications. These are prescriptions.
These are, and they're not only prescription, they're highly controlled substances. So these are not medications that you can accidentally throw into the garbage can and call your doctor the next day and say, oh, I need 30 more. I lost them.
Oh, no.
Pharmacy's not going to do that.
No,
they're
they
not
don't.
Like antibiotics, and they're not like, you know, even narcotics. They're very, very highly controlled. I'm not trying to scare parents.
No,
I'm
of course
trying
not.
To help parents respect what they're putting in their children's body. And it's very important, again, that you make sure you're seeing your doctor, your pediatrician, or internist on a very regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
I see kids on their medications every 2 or 3 months. And a parent may say, well, I don't need to do that. They're doing just fine. But remember, this is a really strong medication we're giving your kids. So
yeah.
I need to check and make sure your child really is doing okay.
And if your child starts it before puberty, it might change after puberty.
Exactly.
And when you, as I said, as you get older, you know, your body changes.
Yeah, it does change. And I will tell you something. With some of the medications, one of the things that I've noticed, particularly in the older kids that I have, the teenagers or the young adults in their early 20s, they may be on a medication like Vyvanse for quite a long time. And we tend to use Vyvanse, so unfortunately it's very expensive because it has less street value than Adderall or Concerta because it's less addictive potential.
Right.
So we tend to use that with college students. But one of the things that I found is with this particular medication is that once it starts to wear off, kids can have their moods go down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a real problem because kids start thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?
Am I depressed?
Am I depressed?
Mm-hmm.
And they begin to think they have depression where they never had it before. So that, to me, is something that we need to fiddle with your medications now because, you know, we don't want you struggling with depression too.
Definitely. Dr. B, let's talk about the other side, the non-medication side. How do you deal emotionally with a child who's just finding out you've got dyslexia
mm-hmm.
or you're going to struggle in math or you've been diagnosed ADHD? Do you recommend counseling? How do you deal with the emotional side of these things to tell a kid, you know, we don't want this stigma to be attached to you. We don't want you to feel bad about these things. How can a parent address that?
Well, one of the things that I do is I, with the child and the parent, is I talk to the child as though it isn't a stigma. I talk very openly and I say, you know, this is what you have. It's not something that you did. It's not something that you created. It's the way, you know, God made you. It's your wiring. It's what you have. But it isn't who you are.
Yeah.
So I talk very bluntly and matter of fact about it. And I talk as directly to the parent as I'm talking to the child, because the parent may feel more of a stigma than the child actually does.
Yeah.
You know, the child may think, okay, well, I have dyslexia. Okay, what does that mean? And then I go on to say, it doesn't mean you're broken. It doesn't mean you're sick. It doesn't mean you're bad. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that you read your letters backwards or you don't put the words in the right sequence. So we're going to get you help so that you do that.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. And it's going to mean that you're going to have to go to school longer than other kids are because you're going to have a tutor to help you with your dyslexia or with your dysgraphia or something else. But again, it doesn't mean you're broken. It's just part of who you are.
Sure.
And then I don't recommend that kids get counseling right away because I think that sends the message to the kids is, uh-oh, you're really broken. This is going to be horrible. We need to help you deal with this.
So if you make a big deal out
of
it, it becomes a big deal.
Exactly. So I encourage parents to just kind of do what I do and talk to the kid very matter-of-factly about it. And don't talk to your child as though it's a huge issue and a problem and that they are now broken. Talk to them as though this is what you live with, but here's how we fix it. Here's how you learn to live with it. And you're going to do just fine.
Sure.
Because I don't want it to become an excuse for you're not doing something. You know, ADHD is not an excuse for not excelling. Dyslexia is not an excuse to not do what you want to do. And so I think that if parents approach their kids like, yeah, it's harder for you, and you're going to have to work longer hours than other kids while you're in medical school or while you're ever, because we do have plenty of young people with dyslexia in professional schools.
Sure.
You have to work harder, but that's just life. So you just teach them to deal with it, but you talk to them with the expectation that their life is going to go just fine.
Oh, that's a great point, Dr. Meeker. Talk to parents about the importance of getting a correct diagnosis.
Yeah.
You know, you suspect something, you've talked to maybe your pediatrician, they suspect it as well. What are the steps you take and why is it so important to get a correct diagnosis?
Well, it's important because it's going to determine the kind of treatment or help that your child is going to get. And that's very important because if you get the wrong diagnosis and the wrong help, all you do is frustrate the child more.
Mm.
What I have found is that many of the schools are not equipped to give a sophisticated diagnosis to a lot of kids. I'm not saying the teachers aren't bright. What I'm saying is it's kind of a time issue and a training issue. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the burden is really on the parents' shoulders to get the correct diagnosis because very often you have to go outside the school system. You have to find an education specialist or a neuropsychologist or a psychologist who is interested in learning issues and can put your child through a battery of tests to really nail down specifically what issue your child is dealing with because it's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get the diagnosis correct, then it's a little bit easier targeting the treatment. But again, it's important for parents not to diagnose the child. It's important for teachers not to diagnose the child. It's fine for either one of them to say, there's an issue here, there's a problem, and then you go to your pediatrician. And then the pediatrician should really start to steer you into the right direction with either a neuropsychologist or an education specialist.
Yeah, definitely. Are there causes to this? You know, I know there's fads that go through and say, oh, we're eating this and that's what's causing so much of that. But when it comes to dyslexia or dysgraphia or ADHD, is there an environmental element to it?
You know, I wish I knew, and I wish a lot of other doctors know. There are a lot of theories out there, and I think we want theories because we want to know what the cause is so we can change what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, no, we don't know. Some people think that diet affects it. I know that using omega-3s has been very helpful for many kids and adults with ADHD, high doses of the fish oil.
Oh, yeah.
And I recommend that as well. But as far as the cause, we really don't know. It'll be interesting to see. We might know in the next decade or two.
Wow. That'd be very, very interesting.
Be great.
It's good, though, to know that you can do things other than just medication.
Yes.
You can do things for diet. I'm a big believer in the omega-3s for our household. what are things we can do in the household? You know, with ADD kids, for me, schedules were very important. Mm-hmm. Lists have been very important. As soon as I could read, if my mom gave me lists of things to do, I'd get my tasks done better than if she just told me a list of things. Right. You know, if she gave me five things to do, I'd do the first one and forget what the other four were.
Right.
But if she wrote it down or if it was on a chart with pictures, I did very well with that. Are there other things parents
can
do?
You know, there are. And again, it depends on what your child has. But I think that it's important if you find out, for instance, that your child is a poor visual learner. They can't find the difference between colors or numbers or shapes. Then you know that one of the ways you can help that child learn is to get them books on tape or to really tap into the audio part of their learning. Maybe they're stronger at that. Again, with ADHD kids, we know that, and adults, we know that they have difficulty finishing tasks. They get off track very, very easily. So a list is excellent. Put it on the refrigerator, but don't put too many things on that list. I think ordering your home is very important. Schedules are very important for kids. Kids who feel that their mind is sort of in a chaotic state anyway don't do well with chaos in the home. They just can't.
Sure.
It's kind of like...
It's already got enough in your head.
Yeah,
you don't need it everywhere else, too.
It really will drive you crazy. I tell parents who don't struggle with ADHD that having ADHD is having a Porsche engine in a VW body.
Yeah.
You know, if your Porsche engine is constantly exposed to a lot of loud noises and changing things and you don't know what to expect around the next corner, chaos, in other words, kids have a harder time coping.
Mm-hmm.
So same bedtime, same wake time, same meal time. It's important that you don't overload that child with too much activity. We tend to want to do that with hyperactive kids because we want to fill up that space and time and their energy with an activity. But it's important for them to have some relaxed activity and some playtime at home as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The scheduling has been very, very helpful for me. And I know for a lot of kids that I know and adults with ADHD, maybe this is a little bit out of left field. Are we diagnosing more kids today than we were in the past? You know, ADHD kind of exploded. I'm thinking, oh, 80s, 90s.
Right.
Is it that we know how to diagnose better, so we're diagnosing more kids? Or are we overdiagnosing?
Well, I think there's both. I think that now we know what to look for and we do have help available. I think that we tend not to diagnose what we can't help, unfortunately. But I think that we're better at diagnosing it. So we're picking up far more kids and adults who have ADHD that we didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think we are overdiagnosing it, particularly physicians who are very, very busy in their offices. You know, handing somebody a pill is a quick, easy to solution. Mm-hmm. And we have to be very careful, because the truth is getting an accurate diagnosis of ADHD takes time and it takes some work. And so we have to be very careful with that as well. But I do wonder if there is something in the environment, because my gut tells me it is more prevalent than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why that is. We know that there's some genetics involved, but it does seem that there's more prevalence than there used to be 20, 30 years ago. And I don't think it's just because we can now diagnose it. I think that we may indeed have more people with it.
That'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the future. Dr. Meeker, before we close, talk to the parent who's just struggling emotionally right now. They've got a kid who's been diagnosed and they're doing the best they can, but they just feel lonely. It does feel lonely to have a kid who you think is different or who maybe is a little bit different. Talk to the parent that's struggling right now.
For parents who have children with severe ADHD, it can be particularly hard. If you're a parent who is quiet, you're an introvert, and you've got a child who's bouncing all over the place, it can really be very, very hard. I think that one of the most important things for parents to do to keep themselves from feeling so down and so isolated is to find one or two close peers that they can say anything they want to, because you diffuse the power and the intensity of the feeling if you just get it out your mouth sometimes and you talk to somebody about it. And you must have a friend or two who accept anything about you and your kids and who are going to look at you and say, you know, your child really is okay. They're a great kid. They're going to do fine, even with ADHD or dyspraxia or dyslexia or whatever. versus a friend that go, oh, I know, that must be so hard to have a child who's like that. You know, you don't need friends like that.
Yeah,
so you
thank
need
you.
Yeah, you need somebody who's your rock wall who
yes.
will pick you up when you're just feeling like you're going to fall flat on your face.
Oh, Dr. Meeker, I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you for being here for these 2 days. This was really enlightening for me, and I hope it gives maybe just a breath of fresh air for parents out there who are struggling or who are just wanting to have a little bit more information.
Absolutely, and I think information and education is extremely important for parents. Again, I recommend the education and information after the diagnosis is made so you don't drive yourself crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then realize they're going to be their child's advocates. So find good resources for a diagnosis, good resources for help once the diagnosis is made. And, you know, walk this out with your child, not in fear, but understanding this is something that you're going to help your child with. It's not going to make his life horrible. It is going to be a little bit harder and a little bit different, but that's okay. He can still have a really wonderful life.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a program we've titled Learning Disorders here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I would imagine that there are many parents out there listening to the program today who are either wondering if your child has a learning disability, or you know that your child struggles with a learning disorder and you'd like to know how to help them. And if that's you, we have several resources for you on our website, including articles and a link to the LD Navigator mentioned last time. I also know that my dad's book, Solid Answers, has several questions on ADD and ADHD and how to discipline a child affected by disabilities. If you'd like to read those articles or pick up a copy of Solid Answers, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.